Thank you very much. So we go on straight into the second one. This one I was told was, I was told to separate the two so that they are distinct in a way, but they really are related. So allow me to now go to talk about translation. Translation is a very interesting space or things that go on in the translating of Bibles. I don't know whether I should address translation from a Protestant perspective. I wasn't very sure about that. Because if it's a Protestant perspective, I'll be talking about the 66 books, which is the Old Testament, which is Hebrew. We base it on the Hebrew. And the New Testament, we base it on Greek. Greek is the 27 books. We use Greek. There are two versions of the manuscripts that we use or the text that we use. But allow me sometimes to fly out of Protestant books into deuterocanonical books where it's necessary. So let me go to Bible translation. I'll talk about the kinds of translation. I will also talk about, give a brief history of Bible translations in world languages. Particularly, I'll give some talk on English because really many of us, the questions we are asking come from because we read English. And I also talk about King James very briefly, modern English translations, Bibles in African languages, and then this big question that is asked everywhere, what is the best Bible version? I will try to engage that, but very briefly. So two kinds of translations, and I'll spend a bit of time on the two kinds of translations because I want to engage you. Okay? There are two kinds of translation. One kind is a literal translation. A literal translation is one that follows as closely as possible the form. So if they have written it in Hebrew in a particular way, then you follow that form, the way they have followed, they have written. Okay? And you'll see, you'll play some game with me in a little while. But generally, form is the way you write. Or let me use English. English, if I say, I am coming home. I is the subject. Coming is the verb. Home is where I'm going, right? That is the form. I am coming home. How would you say it in Kalenjin? Any Kalenjin here? No? Okay. Yes, try it. Try that one in Kalenjin and tell me what you started with. Anyone ka? Anyone is the verb. Ka. Okay, that's not a good example. Okay. Kiswahili? Okay, let's put it this way. John is coming home. Kikuyu, John is coming home. Yeah? So they have almost the same, but there are languages that they arrange it differently, okay? So that is the form. John Aroka. Moshe, yes, something like that. Yes. So that is the form. You're actually telling me the form, the way you organize the structures in the language. Okay? So literal translation tends to follow that, but the second kind of translation is a meaning-based. You actually look for the meaning and then you try to say, how would you say it in another language? With that language, make it as natural in that language as possible. Let's try the next one. That's a meaning-based. Go back to the one before, I think. Go back to the one before. The one before. This one step. This is, okay, somebody's trying to get us. Just go back the one before, yeah. Because I want people to think through the, yeah, that one. Those two. That the A comes from literal translation of Hebrew. Look at that. Note it shall depart scepter from Judah and commander staff from between feet his. Yeah, that is the structure of Hebrew. If you write that and you say you are translating into English, you are in the bush. Nobody will understand you. All right? So translations are not literal in that sense. But this is extreme. But somebody else said, okay, that one is really Hebrew structure. Let us change it to English structure. So somebody translates, the scepter shall not depart from Judah, nor the ruler's staff from between his feet. That is English, isn't it? Yeah, but what does it mean? Actually, one of the Bibles you hold in your hand may be saying that, but what does it mean? What does ruler's staff mean? What does between his feet mean? What does scepter mean? But it is English. It is English, right?
So you notice that it is not just about the sentence structure. That is also still literal. Be is also still literal. Because if somebody asked you what is between his feet, you have no idea what that is. Actually, I've asked it in many meetings and nobody knows what it is. And yet it is in the Bible, one of the Bibles we have, that is the Old King James. Go on to the next one. Let's go meaning-based. Meaning-based is the next one. Meaning-based generally does it differently. And actually almost all Bibles now take a portion of that. It aims to express the exact meaning of the original message in a way that is natural in the target language. So you look at what is the exact meaning? What were they saying? What's the exact meaning? And that's now where you have the notion of don't add, don't take away. Don't add, don't take away. The exact meaning in the from the original language to the target language. It may change in the order of the words, use another order that is clear and natural. It may change in the expressions or idioms. For example, from between his feet means what? And his descendants will always rule. So this thing of between his feet is the descendants. That is what it means, yes. And D, the kings of the people. So instead of just saying Judah will hold the royal scepter, so you're combining Judah and royal. So the kings of the people will come from the tribe of Judah forever. His descendants will always rule. Which translation is better for your understanding? C, D. Yes, those are decisions about what is the best translation. You're already taking those decisions. Let's move on to the next one. So there are two kinds of translations, a literal one or a meaning-based translation. But allow me to quickly go through the history of Bible translation. The Bible has been translated more often than any other literary work. The spread of Christianity is certainly linked with the translation of the Bible. And worldwide, we can talk about over 2,500 languages for which the Bible has been translated. And English is the most translated language, or it is the most translated language, you know, the language that has received most translations is the English translation. It's actually estimated at over 400 versions of the English Bible, both the Old and the New Testament. So let's quickly, very quickly, I'll run through this because this one is very easy to follow. There are numerous older versions of translations, not yet of English. I'm not talking of English yet. So there's the Old Latin, there's Arabic, there's Armenian, Coptic, Ethiopic. Already when I say Coptic and Ethiopic, that already tells you those are Orthodox canons. Okay? Arabic and Armenian is also Orthodox. Arabic most likely would be, I'm not quite sure which canon it was. And then the Old Latin again was the bigger canon that they had. So let us look at the outstanding ones. The outstanding translations that you hear a lot in history is the Targums. Targums were not written translations. They were spoken translations. So they were men who took upon themselves to memorize and speak scripture. And this was the Old Testament. And they were known. It was not just any Dick and Harry doing it, but they were special people. This was particularly necessary after the return from exile. First orally, and then later on it was written. So later on, you see the writings of the Targums, which are part of the Old Testament, but they are different because they went through oral tradition. So they are not identical to what we know now as the Hebrew Bible. Then the next one, very important, is the Septuaginta. Septuaginta is this is a Greek translation. Any Bible translator must read Greek and read this. Because sometimes the only way to explain what Jesus was doing, was saying, the source of what Jesus was saying is you go to this book. So it looks like in the first century, this book, the Septuagint, the Greek translation of the Hebrew Bible, was a common text. And that is where you see also the disciples seems to have read. And also Aramaic. Some of it came from Aramaic. So Septuagint, 3rd century BC. And then the Vulgate was done by Jerome, a man called Jerome. He did a tremendous work translating it initially to Latin. That's the Vulgate to Latin. But what is interesting about Jerome, when he was translating it, he did it with from Greek. He translated from Greek at some point with Greek, and then he changed his mind. He realized when you translate from a translation, it is not as good as when you translate from direct from the source. So what Jerome did, he actually taught himself Hebrew. It took many years to teach himself Hebrew so that he could translate from Hebrew. Very, very interesting as you read that history. Another outstanding one are the English versions. So let me go to the English versions. Most of you needed to know, to hear something on this. So for the English versions, before 1611, please note, before 1611 was much earlier. This was before King James. So you had the Lindisfarne Gospels in 698. You also had the Wessex Gospels in 990. The Wycliffe Bible, many, many people celebrate that Bible, in 1380, 1384. The Tyndale's Bible in 1526 to 1534. And then the Coverdale Bible in 1538 and the Rhymes-Douay Bible in 1582. In other words, I'm just showing English has done a lot of translation many years ago, and they had many translations. Let us go to a few. I'd like to highlight a few. Let me highlight the Wycliffe Bible. Wycliffe voiced serious criticisms of the church, challenging the authority of the Pope and propagating the Bible as the only authority in matters of church and doctrine. He believed that the Bible addresses every person and therefore it should be made available to every person. Remember, at that time, not everybody could read the Bible or access the Bible. So Wycliffe was one of the first rebels, if you like, to say, no, let's get the Bible in the language that people can understand. So he was clear about the political implications. This Bible is for the government of the people, by the people, and for the people. And then his first complete English Bible was based on Latin. It was a literal translation, and it gave priority to Latin syntax and word order instead of English. So he went into the ditch of using literal translation, which doesn't help very much. Then the second version used Vulgate as textual basis. It was done in more natural English because the people for whom he was fighting to get the scripture for could not understand it when it was based word for word from Latin. So he actually based the next one on Vulgate. Now, what am I saying here? Look at how translations rely on one another. Translations rely on one another. They benefit from one another. Even today, when we are doing translations in our Kenyan African context, you constantly are checking, well, how do they do this? Like Biblia Habari Njema has become a very major book. We constantly look at how did they translate Biblia Habari Njema. And partly because when the Biblia Habari Njema was being translated, one consultant who was based in Nairobi, Dr. Renju, he actually stopped being a consultant and decided to be a translator, so that he made sure he did that work very well. He did an amazing work with another doctor, somebody from Tanzania, who gave us Biblia Habari Njema. And so it is something that has been going on over history. In the preface, the best way of translating out of Latin into English is to translate according to the meaning. So this thing about meaning-based translation did not start recently. It was there even with time of Wycliffe. Let me go on to the next one. 1408, Constitutions of Oxford. This is the really, and now into political space. The church hierarchy declared scripture translation a crime in 1408, the Constitutions of Oxford. Translation only after episcopal could happen only if you got episcopal approval. In other words, there was a ban on translation. So 1415, there was a condemnation of Wycliffe Bible, and Wycliffe's body was exhumed and burnt. That tells you the intensity, that you get somebody who is dead and you burn the body. Are you there with me? Is that still Christianity or is it political? Tell me what's going on there. And I'm sharing this because I remember the scripture I mentioned earlier, 2 Timothy. You remember that one? And I want you to have all that as we go on. Let's go on to the next one. In 16th century, the stimulus of reformers for general access to sacred texts happens in the 16th century. During the inventing of printing in the mid-15th century, that also helped a lot. The availability of the biblical text in their original languages
often often they were arbitrary selections. So you get a lot of biblical texts in many languages, but just texts that were decided, like you could do John, another one does Matthew, and another one on and on. So the first critical edition of the Greek-Latin edition of the New Testament comes with Erasmus, 1519. Critical to mean, because of so many versions, you want to say which version is closest to the original, which version can be trusted. So those guidelines are normally given in a critical text. A text, and I want some of you who are eager, come and look at the critical text, you'll see they are here. So that you see what it's telling you at the bottom to say, when you reach this verse, consider this, consider that, consider that. But you take the decision as a translator. Let me quickly go on Tyndale. Tyndale 1528 to 1534. Let me not say much on Tyndale. But Tyndale was charged with heresy and condemned to death in 1538. Tyndale was a major translator in Europe. And it's wonderful what he did. Some of you, I could even share the PowerPoints. King James. Let me quickly go to King James. He called a conference at Hampton in 1604 to address the divisions among religious parties, mainly Anglicans and Puritans. He calls for a new or at least revised translation so that the whole church be bound unto it and none other. Main principles were set out, no notes to be based on best scholarship, to go through committees to be done by both Anglicans and Puritans. Actually, it was very well set. You look at that, the principles he set are some of the principles we still have. However, from the preface, he says something that when you look again, you realize, hey, this one is out of step. The Bishop's Bible is the basis. So what they were basing it on is not this original text. Please note that. And this is one of the reasons that many times you find King James saying something that the other Bibles are not saying. So don't get stuck with King James. Because of the source, the text in which it came from. I don't know how to say that better. It was based on Bishop's Bible as its basis, but it also lists Tyndale, Matthew, Coverdale, Great Bible, and the Geneva Bible as alternative resources if they provide better renderings of the original. So you are relying on a translation to do a translation. And if you are in Bible translation, you know that is trouble. Okay, let's evaluate King James quickly. Generally regarded as the best product possible for its era. For 350 years, the King James was the standard version of the Bible in English. It has deeply influenced English language and literature and become a monument of style and beauty. Not all sections are equally beautiful. There are inconsistencies, even in the spelling of names. These problems may be due to the fact that the work was carried out by different panels. Its manuscript base, this is usually the greatest criticism. Its manuscript base, the textual base, has been heavily questioned, especially in the light of the discoveries of early biblical manuscripts like Qumran findings and the Dead Sea Scrolls. Those two are key in the Christendom. Qumran findings and the Dead Sea Scrolls. Those have shed new light because most of them are within the 20th century, the findings like Dead Sea Scrolls, 1948. And others, and the Qumran findings around that time. It is possible now to be more sure of the original readings of the texts at certain points than at the time when King James was done. And also that English has changed. If you say thou and this, one, you know, thou did this and on, ye and things like that, people will not understand you. Allow me to jump the one on Revised Standard Version, but I had a comment on Revised Standard Version. Probably what I could say on Revised Standard Version is that its base is the Masoretic text. The Masoretic text, which is this one. This is the Masoretic text. Its base of the Old Testament is this. And the base for the English is the New Testament, is the Greek text. But it also has problems. So let me leave that for now. Then there's New King James, and it has its own issues. And the New Revised Standard Version, it has its own issues. But let's go on to Catholic tradition. Let me just mention the Catholic tradition and then I stop. Okay, the Catholic translation, the Jerusalem Bible of 1966, this was the first Catholic Bible based on original languages for previous versions. The previous versions were based on Vulgate, but this particular one, the Jerusalem Bible, was based on Greek and Hebrew, so they are very interesting. This is an interesting Bible to look at. And there's also New Jerusalem Bible, which is less masculine-oriented language. By the way, many times when you're dealing with translations for the Catholic Church, they would like us, or like translators, to look at the Jerusalem Bible, not as source, but in terms of how they've organized the books. So they would say, organize the books according to the Jerusalem Bible, because the Jerusalem Bible seems to say what the way they like it. I've said something on the other, but I think I'll need to stop. I've said something on the Good News. I've said something on NIV, and I've said something comparing NIV. If you go to the NLT and ESV, let me say that because those are very contemporary. The New Living Translation is one of the best translations in the market. I think I would say that. A thought-for-thought translation, a thorough revision of the Living Bible. And then the English Standard Version is another very interesting Bible for study. And let me jump the next one, text source and translation. Jump that one. Thank you. So let me come to the last two statements or slides. There are many versions, and what is their value? Why many versions? Why many versions? Language ages. Every 30 years, a language ages, even your Gikuyu. Even the Kigiriama or whatever, it ages after 30 years. You start seeing the wrinkles in a language after 30 years because you'll not understand a few words that they are using. And that is true of any language. So that is why new editions sometimes are better than the old editions. The needs of communities vary. So for example, nowadays, we have so many young people in churches, unlike before, in our context in Africa. So you need a Bible that young people can read and understand. So if you give them King James, you are killing them because they won't understand the these and those and on and on. The third one, better manuscripts from archaeological findings or discoveries. I've talked about the Qumran findings and the Dead Sea Scrolls. They say they have shed a lot of light. And then the technological changes that have come today. So what adds value to a Bible translation is the basis of the translation, the source text. Please look at the source text. Be alive to it as a Christian in this day and age. Be alive to the source text that they have used and also the language that is used. How free is it from denominational biases? Let me mention that Africa, we have so many Bibles now in Africa. Almost every major language in Africa has a Bible. Some of the older ones were literal in approach, following very closely to the source text that were used. Often source texts were not even indicated. But some newer versions adopted a meaning-based approach, but this approach, especially the base model one, which I don't have time to go into, is also being slowly reviewed. The people don't like it very much. A few languages have several versions of the Bible. For example, Amharic has 7 versions. Kiswahili has over 6 versions. Kikuyu now has 3 versions. Actually, in Kenya, it's one of the languages other than Kiswahili that has many versions, Kikuyu. There's one by Bible Society, and then there's a revised version by Bible Society, and then there's one by Biblica. So they have 3 translations. There are still many languages without the Bible in Africa. So which Bible is the best? And I'm finishing with this. Which Bible is the best? The one that a person can understand best. This has been a philosophy that drove the translations of some of the well-known Bibles. Like Martin Luther actually was looking for the Bible that was spoken by the common Mwananchi. Wycliffe, it's the same. So that notion of the best Bible is the one that people understand. People understand. That determines the best Bible. And then also, the Bible that removes barriers. Like if you have a Bible that uses idioms that are not natural to a language, like when I say between his feet, and you don't even know what I'm talking about. Or I look at this scripture which says, David was hiding in a cave. Saul came looking for David. But then at some point, he decided to enter the cave. And then we are told, he covered his feet, and it moves on. The story doesn't tell you what he was doing. So you ask people, what was he doing? And Sunday school, they say, ilikuwa hapo kwa cave, it was very cold. And some older people, they look at you blank. It actually means, alienda kujisaidia. To cover the feet is a Hebrew idiom for kwenda kujisaidia. So use the right. So barriers like those. African language Bibles are the best for the majority of Africans. And which English versions are the best? It depends on what you are reading the Bible for. If you are studying, then look for the close to literal Bibles like ESV, Bibles like RSV, Bibles like those where if you want to guess what the Hebrew was saying, it is pretty close. Especially if you have Hebrew. If you don't have Hebrew, then it doesn't matter. Go to the one that you understand. And then if you are also teaching devotions, if you're having devotions, many times you really don't want to struggle with saying, what did he mean? I think that one I can do in Bible study, but not devotions. Anyway, the take is yours. Which version is the best? Generally, it's a hard question. It's like asking a friend, which is the best woman to marry? Thank you very much. God bless you.